Internet hackers dumped troves of personal information this week, stolen from an adultery website, raising new questions about online privacy and the ability of websites to protect it. Hari Srinivasan has our look.
The hackers said the attack on Ashley Madison was motivated by the failure of its parent company to deliver on a service that promised to erase users' information for a fee. Millions of names, email addresses, and partial credit card numbers were released, a public outing that has raised questions about how much privacy any of us enjoy online. Joining me to discuss this are Neil Richards, a professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis, where he studies privacy and the Internet. His recent book is Intellectual Privacy, Rethinking Civil Liberties in the Digital Age. And Julia Angwin, who covers privacy for ProPublica. Her most recent book is called Dragnet Nation, A Quest for Privacy, Security, and Freedom in a World of Relentless Surveillance. All right, so Neil, I want to start with you first. We've had the Sony Pictures hack, where thousands of employees of a corporation had their communication and their information released. We've had the Office of Personnel Management hack, 22 million employees of the federal government, right? We've also had celebrity hacks before where unsuspecting celebrities had their photos from iPhones or iClouds released. What makes this different?
Well, it's certainly different because it's more salacious, right? It involves sex and betrayal. I think the magnitude of the hack and the sensitivity of the information that's being exposed, I think it's important that we think about these questions because this is a little more juicy in terms of maybe even like tabloid news than some of the other hacks, but it's important to draw attention to what's an increasingly enormous problem.
So, Julie, I want to ask, there's this notion that your information, especially on a sensitive site like this, sits in a lockbox. And to credit this site, this digital set of locks that they had was actually better than average. But is there such a thing as true security? And as soon as you type something, is it out there forever?
Well, sadly, what we're learning is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of true security out there in the real world. There might well be some theoretically really secure stuff, but we've seen, OPM hack, which is a government, very sensitive files. I mean, you could consider what Snowden did at the NSA to be something akin to, taking files that should have been secured. So it seems as though nothing is impenetrable. But it doesn't have to be that way, I think. I mean, there's another world you could imagine where the data would be secure, and we have to build that, I think.
So, Julia, staying with you for a second, is this the reason that some of these ephemeral platforms like Snapchat, where you're writing with the equivalent of digital disappearing ink, or Periscope, where your live stream disappears in 24 hours, is that the reason that people are going on to this because they think that they don't want to leave a digital trail? And I guess the follow-up is it truly temporary?
Right. Well, I mean, I think you're right that the reason people are going to ephemeral is exactly this, right? You don't want to have a permanent record of everything that you do in life. And in the world we live in with digital data has led to that kind of world where there is kind of a permanent record for everything. The problem with the ephemeral services is that some of them have proved not to be that ephemeral. So the Snapchat, for instance, just settled with the FTC because their data wasn't as ephemeral as they had promised it to be. So I think we're still awaiting the true promise of ephemeral data.
Neil, there's this transparency camp out there that says, you know what, if you weren't planning on having an affair, you've got nothing to hide. I mean, there seems to be a distinction between privacy and secrecy. I mean, privacy to me implies a level of control, almost a freedom that I have to choose whom to share this information with.
Yeah, I think it makes for a good soundbite, but it doesn't make for a very good policy to say that we should just make everything transparent and people with nothing to hide have nothing to fear, right? I mean, we all wear clothes, we all lock our houses, we all like passwords on our accounts. I mean, I think the issue here is not one of whether some people who cheated on their marriages got their comeuppance. I think it's a much more important question, which is, are we going to be able to trust the information relationships which increasingly characterize our lives? And yeah, yes, dating sites are among them, but more important than that are things like social network sites and search engines and data brokers and our credit card companies and our retirement accounts. All of these or information relationships, they are all safeguarded by some levels of security. And I think the Ashley Madison story is a salacious one, but it's an important reminder. We need to do a better job safeguarding our sensitive data as a society, and that means we need better technical practices, we need better laws, better incentives for companies to do this. We have a lot to do, and I think it's important that we're focusing on this, because it's ultimately what's at stake is whether we can continue to trust our digital society.
Neil, is the notion of privacy an antiquated idea, or perhaps is it different from generation to generation?
Well, people have been bemoaning the death of privacy in American life for about 130 years, since the late 19th century. Privacy is about what kind of information we have control over, about how we get embarrassed, what information restrictions can do for us. Privacy depends upon social norms. It's always changing. But in an information society, and that's what we're living in, if we have no privacy, if we have no privacy rules, we have no information rules, which means we have no rules. And so rules governing passwords, personal data, search engines, consumer credit reports, they are essential. And I think we are struggling, as in other areas of the internet, we are struggling and stumbling into the future half blind because we've never built this before. But it's important, as Julia said, we can do a better job than we're doing, and we need to build it right.
Julia, one of the things you looked at in your book, or for your book, was trying to find all the information about you that exists. And obviously there's public records out there. We can try to guess what's available. But what surprised you?
So I went and tried to find as much as I could about myself, and I wasn't that successful. It's worth pointing out that there are not good laws allowing you access to your data. But of the data that I found the obvious things, the property records, the car ownership. But what surprised me was the fact that they knew I'd bought underwear online the last week. And that was being in, you know, a file that's sold to marketers. I also found, by the way, the government, through some confusing slip-up with my employer, had access to my travel plans as a reporter and who I was planning to see. Because of the way we used our system, the database was being sent in entirety of my future travel plans to a government database. So there was some really surprising and disturbing stuff in there.
So, Julia, you took some elaborate measures that most of us can't take. You've essentially got an alternate identity, credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. But let's say we're not going to go that far. Are there safe information sharing practices, things that we can do on a daily basis to safeguard against this?
I mean, I wish I could give you a better set of guidelines, but it's the fact is that it's really hard to avoid these kinds of things. However, that said, some basic precautions are better passwords, really long passwords, so as long as you can possibly make it, 30 to 40 characters. And actually, you know, you talk about fake identities like it's a crazy thing, but it, you know, it makes sense to have a couple different email addresses, maybe not with your right name, for which you register for sites like Ashley Madison, for instance.
All right, Julia Angwin, Neil Richards, thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.